With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Phil Vickery, and you're listening to the Mall Over podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook. And you can find all of our podcasts on most of your well-known podcatchers. We like to talk a bit about Jesus fucking Christ. Every week now, I can't get it right. Can't do it. It's an abortion. Sorry about that.
You're an idiot.
Thanks. Well, as you well know then, that's the Lensman. He's here somewhere equidistant between Liverpool and Leeds. Tucking into a chicken Dan sack.
And, yeah, you might be able to hear that. I make no apology.
And drinking some Pepsi. I'm also joined by nicest man in Cornish Rugby Podcasting, who looks to have on my screen some kind of giant.
It's getting narrower every week, isn't it? Because it was the nicest man in podcasting. Now it's the nicest man in Cornish podcasting.
And he looks like he's got a massive phallus just dangling above his head.
He does. Yeah.
It's a sock puppet.
Oh, it's a sock puppet.
Yeah, it's a unicorn.
Ah, oh, lovely. I hear congratulations are in order, Ben. You've got yourself a new puppy.
Yeah, Duke. He's a Springer Spaniel. He's 13 weeks old. And he's got very sharp teeth.
For a minute. and Doug, you've got yourself a chicken Dansack.
Yeah.
And no Phil tonight. He's busy tearing Vodafone a new arsehole because he tried to come on and we couldn't hear him. So we banished him to the Cornish countryside to
you know
deal
why
with
he
his
gets
internet.
Shit internet, right?
Because he lives in the arsehole of nowhere.
No, it's because of all the housewives frantically trying to WhatsApp him.
Relentlessly WhatsApping the housewife's favourite.
Can I just make an impassioned plea? Like, you know, one of those sort of African adverts. You know, Mapuzela can't drink clean water. Just £1 a month will help build a well. Like, we should make an appeal. Just £1 a month to all these housewives. Just get them just leave Phil alone for a bit of the podcast.
All we want is Phil on the podcast, which I'm sure is what everybody wants. Less of me.
He's on his way to Vodafone shop in Truro, isn't he? To go full on Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Oh.
Call me a cynic, but I'm guessing, and it's only a guess, mind, but at 8:40 on a Monday night, Vodafone in Truro is not open.
Mate, you could go there at fucking 10:25 in the morning. And vote, because let me tell you one thing, Vodafone in Truro doesn't exist.
Is it not?
I don't know, mate. It's doubtful, isn't it?
You got old Steve that works in Vodafone, and I thought you were going to come in at 10 to 12, mate. That's why you weren't there.
he doesn't get up very early because he has to pull pints in Wetherspoons.
He's making breakfast till midday.
He just does Vodafone from the corner from the little serving hatch. Weatherspoons and Vodafone. Other mobile operators are available.
And crap pubs.
And crap, yeah, crap, cheap, god-off beer pubs.
I went into the Weatherspoons in Bristol is called the WG Grace. And for some reason, I thought that would make it slightly classier than your average Weatherspoons. But I should have known when I got there and it was just called the W Race.
All the G's are gone.
Yeah, it just needed a good pressure wash, if I'm honest.
Not for the first time.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about any rugby whatsoever, and you'll be pleased to know there isn't too much of that this week, I just wanted to say a huge go well soon to Phil Ben and I's friend and rugby coach Daryl Mayers. You may have seen on the news, like, I had loads of messages from across rugby and in general about a police officer in Newquay who was involved in a pretty serious incident at the back end of last week. Unfortunately, that was Daryl, who was one of the coaches for a long time at Newquay Hornets. And his son, Josh, who is quite a prevalent player in the Hornets now, isn't he? He's decent as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very good player, yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, he was involved in an incident with some Bulgarian geezer who was sleeping rough and, for all intents and purposes, basically set Daryl on fire. And I, for one, know how painful that is. So I, our thoughts and feelings go out to Daryl and his family and Josh and that. And I'm sure the rugby community will all wish Daryl well and get well soon. And hopefully he'll be back on the rugby field or in and around the Newquay Hornets at some point very soon. Let's talk a little bit about rugby. Let's start off with some positive stuff, because we talked the other week when we last got together about how moribund the Premiership was since its return and how poor it's been and how uninspiring it's been. Needless to say, you know, the prime example being yesterday, which was probably less players that would have been involved in an A-League game for Saracens versus Exeter, which absolutely nobody paid any attention to whatsoever. I don't even know what the result was, and I don't really care. That's both for you, James, and Matt. Nobody even saw the result, and, you know, Saracens are relegated, so that's yours. Positive, though, one of the teams that's come out of the restart in excellent fashion is Bath, Ben, obviously your team. What has made them so strong, so good since the restart? Obviously they were involved in a great game at the weekend, probably game of the weekend against the full strength Sale side.
I think you could see the sort of seeds of the plan that they had before lockdown, which was to get a very strong base up front, with the front five, got a very dynamic back row, and they've kept to that plan, which has served them in good stead against some of these sort of younger sides. Obviously, they've added Spencer, which is a whole new level. His box kicking's brilliant. He's a complete opportunist, and, you know, I think Chudley was a good signing, but Spencer's just probably one of the best signings of the year. And they've just, I don't think they've put out as weakened a side as a lot, most of the other teams we've seen. You know, against Worcester, it was a closer to a second team, but you still had, you know, Mercer, you still had the strong front five, Stuke, people like that. So, you know, they haven't put out a fully weakened side. I think they really want to go for the top four. And they've played some good rugby and they've started to score tries. You know, McConaughey's on pretty hot form and they're just generally playing really well. But that game against Sale, it was a proper game of rugby. It was two sides picked to win and it was a pretty ding-dong affair. Two brilliant back rows and it was really enjoyable to watch.
It's interesting to see, the, like you say, the sides that Bath have been putting out. Looking at the lineup from this weekend just gone, obviously there was Dunn, Urbano and Will Stewart. I mean, Urbano's been getting all sorts of plaudits, but Tom Dunn and Will Stewart have been there as well. Josh McNally, friend of the pod, and Charlie Yules. But like you say, you add Elliot Stook into that mix as well. And they seem to have found a way to kind of rotate those three in and out of the in and out of the team, and add Will Spencer into that as well, who is another solid second. It is Will Spencer, isn't it?
Yeah, he came from Leicester.
From Leicester, yeah.
He came on and did really well yesterday, actually, and got quite a nasty sort of facial injury. But yeah, you're right.
A nasty gash.
Yeah, he did. Yes, very nasty. You know, they've got De Glanville and Redpath, who they've kind of introduced. And I think Ellis and Reed in the back row, whenever they've played, they've really shown, you know, they've shown up and played really well. So, you know, it's been quite impressive how they've managed to spread the load.
It's interesting to, like, since Neil Hatley's come in, like, since just before, like, the restart, they seem to have, like, properly got more of a purpose, got more of a vision. Because before, we were talking a lot about Bath, you know, in the first half of the season being seemingly rudderless and Stuart Hooper being a little bit, not necessarily clueless, but we were questioning the romance of the appointment, a bit like Jordan Murphy at Leicester, where, you know, left to his own devices, you know, albeit a one-club man, you know, Bath through and through, whether he had the technical capability and know-how to bring the team forward. And what we've seen, you know, evidently with someone like Neil Hatley coming in, is that with a direction and coaching to suit that direction, actually, you know, someone like Stuart Hooper is a good director of rugby, a bit like, you know, you see Baxter at Exeter with Ali Heffer and the likes. And you see it across the Premiership. Doug?
Yeah, look, Stuart Hooper has done nothing different.
No.
He's considered now to be a good director of rugby because he's got a shitload of world-class players. If Stuart Hooper was dealing with the same dross that is at Leicester at the moment, he wouldn't be a good director of rugby. He's brought in Neil Hatley, who seems to have sorted a few things out, but the top and bottom of this whole situation is the fact that Bath's entire squad is fit and they've got six or seven England players and they've got three or four other world-class players. So that's why they're better.
Fair enough.
When all's said and done with all of these squads in the Premiership, you can all look at their squads on paper, and when they're all fit, you know that it's going to be Saracens, Exeter, Bristol, Bath because of the players they've got available to them.
I think that's fair, but what I was saying earlier is that I think he had an idea, a bit like a vision for, put it in a Ponzi way, and I think bringing Hatley in there has helped. But, you know, Russ is right. He's brought in the right person because their scrum is effective. Their line out, I think, is the best in the league. And the driving maul is a real danger for everybody. They've scored a lot of tries off it. And you know, they're not dull to watch. It's not like it's just completely forward oriented. They've been pretty decent to watch. And it's nice to see a plan come together.
That's what Hannibal Smith said, wasn't it?
It did. Can we just talk about that try that Matavesi scored?
Against, was it Worcester?
Worcester,
night?
Yeah. With the full Tim Eustace dummy and then just sat down the defender and went in under the post. I think he surprised even himself.
He literally asked him, didn't he?
He
Rocky the Goonie went on a bit of a mazy run and then like the proper sort of South Island sidestep and was see you later. I mean, like you say, Bath have got that power game with the finesse. You mentioned McConaughey, Jonathan Joseph, Redpath has shown glimpses. We haven't seen anything of Lokonasiga, who's been injured still. So, you know, they, like Doug did say, when those squads come together, maybe apart from a few in the Premiership, the exception of maybe London Irish, Harlequins don't seem to have as much depth. Or Worcester, for instance, whilst they have flashes of good players, they don't have the depth.
I don't think, you know, Bristol, you know, when they've not been putting their first team out, they've been getting a hide in.
Well, you can just see Bristol now. Obviously, Bristol have gone from being second by quite a clear margin at the restart. They've lost since the restart. They've won 4 and lost 3. So Bristol lost to Exeter, lost to Sale, and then they lost at the weekend to Gloucester to Wasps, which would have been a fun game for you to watch, Ben. Over 100 points in that game.
Well, I tell you what, I did watch it, and it was awful.
It was basically a game of touch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Wasps had got their bonus point within the first 17 minutes. And then after that, I mean, you know, there's good tries in a match like that. And, you know, players played well. Malins played well for Bristol. You've got the Willises. You've got Dan Robson's playing really well. But, you know, what are you really learning from that? You know, Bristol put a load of kids out and they got walloped by a good side. You know, it's not. Do you really want to watch that every week? I don't think so. I mean, the big positive for Wasps, I think, was that they gave the kid Barbaria
he a looked run. Very good, didn't he?
Yeah. You know, a couple of those tries were fairly simple, but, you know, he ran a good line for one of them. There was one where he stepped inside and beat a player, which was a brilliant try. I thought the most impressive one was the one he made at the end where he offloaded out of a tackle. You know, so they'd be really pleased with him. But I think a game like that, because I think one of the things Bath have been successful with is they've played quite aggressive defence. People like Underhill obviously always hit hard. Joseph's defence has been brilliant. You know, he always catches that. He usually lets the guy sort of think he's got away and then hauls him down. And I think they've defended really well. The only issue I've got maybe there is there seem to be a few gaps through the 10-12 channel at times. But they have got that defence that kind of pushes the opposition back. And you question from a lot of these games if teams are being able to practice that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It certainly is. And when you say we looked at Bristol, they're sort of sliding down the league at the moment. But it is, it's three teams from four that are going to make the top four. Pretty standard Austin Healey statement, that, wasn't it? Like, state the obvious. Wasps currently have 61, Bath have 60, Sale have 59, and Bristol have 59. So bonus points are definitely going to come into play. But if we look at the fixtures that are left to play, Bath have got Gloucester at home in the next round of Premiership matches. And then they are away at Saracens in the last round on the 4th of October. Whereas Wasps, they are away at Harlequins and then at home to Exeter. Now, Exeter have already confirmed a home semi-final. And I think, if my maths is correct, that they can't even be caught to be finishing top of the league. So they're definitely going to be first in the league now with two games to play. So I could see a world where with Europe coming up this weekend against Northampton, who we'll come on to in a minute, Doug, and the strength of the squad they're going to put into that to really make a European challenge. Do you think that Exeter could well just mail in those two games if required? Or, you know, we've seen how they've performed with a squad rotation system and Wasps can just walk in through an open door.
For the Premiership final?
No, for the semi-finals to make that top four. So Sale have got.
Oh, so you're saying Wasps are second, right?
Wasps are second at the moment, and
top four set, isn't it?
No, because Bristol are in fifth at the moment on 59. Sale are on fourth on 59. Bath are in third on 60, and Wasps are in second on 61. So it's three from those four. And I was just looking at those fixtures. So, like I say, Bristol.
Well, I mean, you've got to think logically about it. Players can play 180 minutes in a week. They haven't got three games in a week, so they can play every game now till the end of the season.
Yeah.
Did Pat Lamb throw away that game last week just so that he can play his first choice side for the rest of the season and guarantee promotion, guarantee top four? But I think ultimately, I'm finding it hard to really care. If I'm honest, I just Exeter are going to win the league at a canter. They've done everything they can to try and throw games away and haven't been able to, because it would seem that for all that has gone on, Exeter have been putting out their... Everyone that's played Exeter has basically put out a twos team, or at worst, or worse. So even when Exeter are putting their twos out, they're still stronger than other teams' twos. So they've just been smashing everyone. And they run into Saracens and they basically had their threes out. So
it was like fucking Dunstablians midweek 15 on Sunday at the Allianz.
Do you honestly see Exeter losing to any of those four teams?
Well,
even if Bristol are at full strength?
It's one of them, isn't it? A one-off game at Twickenham, but no, I genuinely can't see it.
No,
it obviously could happen, but yeah, no. It would be an upset, put it that way.
Agreed. We can go back to the value of all this. I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, but a lot of the rugby we've seen since the restart has been bollocks and doesn't really show the Premiership in its best light.
It really doesn't. As a product, more than anything, it's... Such a, all playing all these games, and it's almost worse that they bloody televised them all.
Yeah,
because it's made it look even worse than what it was.
I mean, most of the fixtures I've worked on have been A-League games at best. If you turned up to an A-League game, you know, you'd be like, okay, we've got a few first teamers out, brilliant, but a lot of it's been bullshit, man. A lot of it.
Talking of bullshit, then let's have a bit of a chat about Northampton. They go into this weekend's Champions Cup quarterfinal of Exeter on arguably, second from bottom in the form table over the last five games with 2 points, next to no fit frontline props.
Even our starting ones were shit anyway.
Yeah, and losing to Leicester in the East Midlands derby at the weekend. But again, you know, that fixture used to be something that everybody cared about, especially the fans of both these teams.
Well, the fans still care about it.
Well, nobody but the players didn't seem to care about it at the weekend.
I think the players have phoned it in, and they phoned it in from the start. The amount of penalties we've given away, the amount of turnovers we needlessly create by trying to offload. I'd love to see a league statistic for offloads in the touch, because Saints would be top of that by about 50. It's outrageous the amount of shit that we're doing. We get constantly on the wrong side of the refs. We can't. So our scrum's an embarrassment. Leicester won penalties against our scrum with 13 men. They had Nadolo in there. They had two backs in the scrum, and we're turning our scrum over. And we've got an All Black in the front row. It's embarrassing.
And what about...
I said at the time, I love Phil Dowson. It showed me what his qualification is to be coaching front, top of the league, forward packs. What has he done? Bath bring in Neil Hatley, we bring in Phil Dowson. There's a disconnect. We're great when everything is humming, but when you lose the foot, it shouldn't be overlooked how much we're missing Reinach.
Yeah,
because I think he freezes defence, which creates gaps out wide, which is probably what we're missing. With just the fear of him breaking off of rucks. Holds three, four players in at the ruck, doesn't it? And the worst thing about that is not even starting for Montpellier. It's where scrum halves go to die, isn't it? And I don't know. I just hope he enjoys the paycheck. But it's going to be a long year next year if we don't sort something out with that pack. Because teams just bully us.
Are all the, here's a question. So, like, with all the contracts that have been signed, like, I need to get this straight in my own head before when I'm asked. Whilst I'm asking this question, is there are all the squads for next season kind of the squads we're seeing now? We're not going to see any other sort of player movement, are we? Because of all these players that have moved when their contracts ended in June or whatever it was.
I think this season's basically going to be a continuation of next.
So this is
going to be a continuation of this one, and that's a terrifying thought with the absolute shit show that is our front row.
Yeah, and looking at it, this is almost like for a lot of teams, like a glorified pre-season, isn't it?
Yeah,
like loads of high intent. Well, I would say high intensity, but what should be high intensity friendly matches in part of a league format that you know should be preparing teams for what's to come next season, which will be a bit weird. But yeah, it's hard to see how it's going to get any better.
No, I can't either. I watched that game and everyone has been rocking up and pumping Leicester. And we
routinely.
And we looked so second best. We looked second best to one of the worst teams that's ever played in the Premiership. And it's a real worry compared to where we were pre-lockdown, where we were thinking, bloody hell, we could be, you know, we should be pushing for the Premiership final here. This is an exciting time to be a Saints fan. And now it's, you know, back to Malinder era.
Ben?
So, you mentioned Leicester. Saracens would have caught them by now, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
If they'd have had the minus 35, they would now be, I think they had gone past Leicester. I don't know if Leicester winning the other day changed that, but it doesn't alter the fact that they're pretty close and they will probably go past them. I wonder if they missed the trick with Saracens of if they'd gone with that minus 35 points and stuck with it, it might have livened the season up a bit. You know, if they'd brought a full shooting match to every game. I mean, they've only Exeter have actually lost less games than Saracens anyway, but you know, maybe if they'd have let them play the season out at minus 35, then they could have just relegated them anyway if they felt that was the way to go. Maybe it would have given the season a bit more life than what we've had.
But we said this from the moment that Saracens were relegated, is that, or you know, were given the 70 point deduction, is that it ended the season for a lot of the teams as a contest because there's no threat of relegation. So for London Irish, for Leicester, for Worcester, who, you know, are the bottom three without Saracens, you know, there's no consequence for them. They could have had a good go at the Champions Cup, maybe if they were so inclined, but ultimately, they were never going to get there, were they? And it just shows that, you know, they are 30, Worcester are 27 points off of Bristol in fifth and a chance of a Champions Cup place. It's such an odd little, you know, three-tiered league at the moment, Saracens aside. You know, Leicester, Irish and Worcester, there's 4 points between them, 28 to 32. Then you've got Gloucester, Northampton and Quins on 41, 42, 42. And then Bristol, Sale, Bath, Wasps on 59 to 61. And then Exeter on 73. It's just the whole league doesn't make any sense. It's inconsequential. I think is probably the best way to describe it.
So it's become a league of, even with a salary cap, it's become a league of haves and have-nots, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Which
and,
is
and
what
it does lead you to question, like,
the validity of the salary cap.
Well, yeah. And who's monitoring it? I don't know. I'd love to know how Bristol are doing it. I'd love to know how Bath are doing it. I'd love to know how Saracens do it. I'd love to know how Exeter do it. Because when you look at the squads of teams like Worcester, Leicester, Northampton, Gloucester to an extent. Now all the South Africans are gone. It's mismanagement in a way, isn't it? It's almost negligent that if you're in a league with a salary cap, you're not doing what the other teams are doing. If Bridrada was available, why wasn't every team in the Premiership trying to get him? Because that's what happened in football. If one of the best players became available in the world, why weren't... Are you telling me Leinster wouldn't want him? Are you telling me that Edinburgh wouldn't want him? Are you telling me, like, any of the French teams?
The Crusaders.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah.
So, where, you know, that must mean that he's on a significant amount of money to come here. But if you're in a salary cap, it shouldn't matter. Because, you know, you can only offer him so much.
Well, you know, he'll be a marquee player that sits outside
so
of us.
So what's Carl Sinclair or Charles Peartow?
Well, you'd think that Peartow and Rodrada would be the...
Or Nathan Hughes.
Well, yeah, Nathan Hughes would be under the England credits, I'd imagine. Sinclair, they would get money, credit England credits for him.
My point is, I get what you're saying. Why are Northampton not trying to sign Rodrada? Why are Northampton not trying to break the bank to get Carl Sinclair, a player that they desperately could use?
Well, because they haven't got Steve Lansdowne, I'd imagine.
No, but it doesn't matter if you've got a billionaire owner. He can only spend so much, Russ. And I know we've got Dan Bigger, but who else is there?
I don't want to turn this into a game of guess the marquee player. We had poor reviews about it.
What I want to do is question the motives and, like, what did Northampton want to do? Because if you want to win the Premiership, doing what you're doing ain't going to work. You need to spend some money. But if you don't think you can compete with Lansdowne and Mr. Dyson or whatever, then just say, because rugby fans aren't football fans. If you just say, look, we want to compete for honours, but the reality is we're going to be a mid-table team. One year we might get in the playoffs, one year we might not. Just level with us. But what we're doing at the moment, we've let our best player go and we've not replaced him. We've lost our second best player, Dylan Hartley, through retirement, with no clear succession plan. We're shitting through props like someone's eating a bad curry and is just passing them through. I don't really know. I just want the club to be honest and just say, look, yep, we've got our recruitment wrong.
Do you think they're all prepared? A part of me, again, when Saracens were relegated, I mooted about the point that the clubs will just be gearing themselves back up. And Saracens coming back up isn't a foregone conclusion with Elim, but it is a foregone conclusion, let's be honest. The only way Saracens don't come back up is, you know, when they decide if Elim are top of the league with two games to go and Saracens can't catch them, and all of a sudden they decide to promote two teams and then just cut it off there. But do you not think, do you think without saying the word ring fence, just said it, that all the teams are just kind of preparing for that now and just going, well, who cares?
I don't know why, what we've been saying, talking about it for 2 years, why they don't just expand the Premiership to 14 teams to fit with the other two leagues.
Yeah.
And just be done with the ring fencing, because if you promoted Ealing, Saracens and one other, is anyone going to be bothered? And
no.
You just license it for 5 years. I don't know. Couldn't give a shit. But Ealing clearly have the funds and the resources to come up, but they can't because there's always a team that is just a little bit more financially viable than them. And that's probably because of the TV money. But if Ealing were given the TV money,
and the fact that they're part of the 13-team Premiership conglomerate.
Who are Ealing?
No, the other 13 teams. Ealing are the outlier at the moment, but that outlier has been...
I prefer to call them a cartel, but whatever.
Yeah, but that outlier has been, you know, it's Ealing at the moment because they're being got funds, but in the past it has been the Pirates. It has been London.
My preference would be to promote Ealing and Cornish Pirates, because the South West, I think it'd be good just for the game in general for that area to have a Premiership club.
It would be incredible.
I can't see it happening because you put Maple League in at 4. They all want to ring fence it, but they want to ring fence it at 12 to protect their little bit of money. It would make sense. I don't understand why it hasn't even been discussed that 14 teams should happen.
And like you say, if they could even put a 3-year license on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be 5. They could just try it for 3 years and see what happens.
Or just do a playoff. Top of the Championship against the bottom of the Premiership.
Yeah.
At the Premiership club's ground. Then you really need to beat them, you know. It'll ruin the Championship and it'll ruin the rugby pyramid. But the only other alternative, the only other viable alternative is a franchise-based Super Rugby system that nobody will watch.
No. And nobody wants. Because much like franchise cricket in this country at the moment, and the ill-fated 100 that never happened and... You know, may never happen. Who knows? But
fingers crossed.
How many people kind of bought into that? Not many. And yes, it wasn't given a chance because of the pandemic. But you know, I don't think it would have taken off the way that the ECB thought it would, which would be the same for rugby. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't sit well with traditional rugby fans as a replacement for the traditional rugby season.
I also think that if you ring, we're getting a look into the future of what ring fence rugby would be like with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right. And it's not a very good look to the future, is it?
No. But I said this in December, honestly, or whenever it was, when it was all kicking off.
I honestly believe that if you announced the squads before the ticket sale went on sale for some of these games, you wouldn't have many more people in the stands than what are there at the moment.
Because it's glorified A-League. And how many people do you get turning up on a Monday evening for A-League?
Quid for the privilege.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a bit of a get out of jail free for some of the clubs that is being played behind closed doors, because it would have been embarrassing the amount of fans that actually turned up.
I think so. I really do think so. London Irish especially.
Well, we'll see what happens when they move to the new Brentford Stadium. I don't even know when that's supposed to be ready, but that's a different thing. In a little bit of news this week, you see Luther Burrell has left Wakefield. Is it Wakefield Trinity or whoever he was? Yeah, he's left.
He's playing for
Warrington, that's it. Warrington Wolves. He's left, whether it's by mutual consent or whatever, but he's looking to get back into rugby union.
By all accounts, he wasn't very good at rugby league, from people who work on the rugby league.
Oh, really? He played 8 games or had 8 starts or 8 squad picks in the year he was with Warrington, which kind of speaks volumes, isn't it? If you're a fairly big star in union and you're only getting picked in the squad 8 times, you'd think, okay, mate.
Yeah.
Where could you see him landing? Back at Saints?
Ealing.
Interesting.
Ealing, yeah, he's got an Ealing-y kind of player, isn't he?
What, as in loves money?
As in Premiership ability.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're going to need to even compete with Saracens. You're going to need 15 players that can play twice a season.
Compete
in the Premiership.
I mean, if you look down at that bottom half of the table, like we were just looking at a second ago, you could see him legitimately fitting in. Maybe not Gloucester, but Worcester, Leicester, London Irish.
Worcester don't need him, man. They got Ollie Lawrence. That guy's really good.
He is good, isn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. You know, he could... But I like Doug's idea. I think he does have an Ealing feel to it, doesn't it? You know,
there once was a lady from Ealing.
Yeah, I get that feeling. you know, he's been off and tried something else, sort of big-ish name. You know, he would draw crowds in the Championship, I'd imagine. But, you know, if he signed for Bristol, he ain't going to bring many bums through the door, is he? So, you know, I think that does have a ring of truth to it.
Yeah. Fair enough. Any other rugby related news you wanna chat about? Anything that's going on?
Just should we talk about the furore about that's being whipped up about Chris Boyd's comment about ugly girls being left on the wall or something? I mean, McLaughlin seems to have taken offence to.
Well, it's one of those comments.
If only she had a platform to address it.
Yeah. Well, like, where would you suggest she addressed it?
Well, the next press conference that Chris Boyd hosts, maybe just ask him.
Well, Chris, what did you mean by that?
Yeah.
Rather than out him as a misogynist on Twitter. But then that's what Twitter's for, isn't it? Apparently, just people whipping up fury.
Did we talk about the red card?
Which Farrell. One, mate?
Farrell.
No, because that was last week and we didn't do a podcast last week.
And what more needs to be said other than just he missed time to tackle and got sent off for mistiming said tackle.
And actually got fairly harshly dealt with in the sanctioning, I thought. A five-week ban, which is actually a five-match ban because of the way they're playing the games at the moment. But when Piatow and Kitchener apparently throwing punch, larruping each other, for want of a better phrase, or having a bit of a punch-up, get three games each, I got the feeling that Farrell was very much being singled out for stuff that he's not been punished for in the past. I don't know whether you thought that. You know, it's easy.
It's about time there's a punch thrown in the Premiership. It's a little bit... a little bit namby-pamby in it at the moment.
Was it in the Leicester
Saints game? Somebody said, "Oh, let's have it in the car park." and loads of people kicked off. Loads of people kicked off about
no
that.
Place for that in rugby. There is at every single game. Every single game. I once played a game of football for RAF Wittering against RAF Cottesmore, and that was always a bit of a derby because it's two Harrier squadron bases just up the road from each other. It's always a bit of a ding-dong. And I stood on a bloke's ankle as he got up and after I tackled him. He said, "If you do that again, I'll hit you so many times you'll feel like you've been ambushed." I was like, "Oh, whatever, you little..." So anyway, I tackled him.
You called him little?
Yeah. Well, we were two fullbacks, mate, going at each other. We're two little aggro fullbacks. And so I did it again, and I stood in his ankle. And fair play to him. He got up and he punched me about three times right on the chin. Yeah.
Turned out he was like the RAF flyweight champion or something.
I mean, obviously, I just stood there and, you know,
took it.
Yeah. We both got sent off.
It's not the best sending off story you'll ever hear, though. People are bored of that one right now.
What annoyed me about the Farrell thing is, you know, I think it was a deserved red card for sure.
I don't think I've seen anybody in the whole of the world who disagrees that it was supposed to be a red card. I think everybody knows it was a red card.
That would have got
all right with that.
A red card in 1985, wouldn't it? It was a bad tackle, but, you know, there were people wanting him banned for 6 months. And, you know, I saw the phrase, This will put people off rugby. And it's like, no, it won't. Who's that going to put off rugby? People that don't like getting hit in the head, maybe. But they don't tend to play rugby, do they? It's like, I just thought there was a lot of overreactions, which, you know, obviously we're used to now. But, he's going to miss the Leinster game. That's the only thing, because, you know, that could be a great game.
It could
be a rotter as well, couldn't it?
I think that for all of Saracen's like best players and the best team that they could put out on the pitch, the fact that none of them have really played any rugby for God knows how long.
Well, nor have Leinster.
Leinster have played a few games. They won the Pro 14. I don't know what sort of side they had out.
They win the Pro 14 by putting out teams that would... You know, like A-League teams.
Let's have a look at the team they put out. Oh, that was it the weekend? Must have been the weekend before last, or was it on Saturday?
Saturday, wasn't it? Yeah.
They beat Ulster 27-5. So Conan, Healy, Henshaw, Kelleher, Lama, Porter, Ringrose, Ryan, Toner, Van der Flair. I mean, they had a first team squad out.
That's a fair old team. That row's decent, isn't it?
The week before, they know they're going to be playing Saracens, whereas Saracens are putting out people that literally I've never heard of. But that's the thing, you know. I don't think Saracens would have really stood a chance against Leinster anyway, especially in Leinster. And with, let's say, Saracens' best players not playing any rugby whatsoever, it's too much to ask for them to just drop into a one-week game such as that. So the fact that Farrell is banned and won't be playing probably just turns it into a little bit more of an ass in.
Yeah, I don't really care. I hate both the teams. I hope they both lose.
When is that? I thought that was this weekend, but it's not.
It is this weekend, yeah.
Oh, where's the fixtures all fucking ballsed up? Because it's got Premiership rugby fixtures Saturday the 19th for the 9th, which is clearly isn't true, unless all they must be postponed for another day. So Northampton, we mentioned Northampton, Exeter, Leinster versus Saracens. I'm fucked if I can remember or be bothered who's left in that. It's only Exeter I really care about in the Champions Cup.
Claremont and Racing and Toulouse and Ulster.
So what we said, Toulouse, nobody cares about the other game, and then everybody hopes Exeter win.
Yeah.
I think pretty much. And that's everybody in the Premiership hoping Exeter win on Sunday.
Especially Saracens fans, they'll love it.
I can see the Saracens fans getting really, really behind Exeter at the weekend. When they play Northampton, yeah. Maybe the Rugby Saracens account will put on an extra headdress, and they'll be doing the tomahawk chop all the way down, you know, down through the Allianz Arena.
Don't say that.
Or Allianz Park. The Allianz Arena is by Munich, isn't it? That would be a bit weird. Right, let's move on. Let's just get into some any other business. Doug, why don't you kick us off in your travel tavern?
50 over cricket. I've done it before. I'm going to do it again. It's just shit. It goes on and on and on. Time to put it to start. Let's just go with 2020 and tests, and everyone's happy.
Hate 50 over cricket. Love money. Is that going to catch on as well?
Yeah,
hate tennis. Love money.
I'm at the point with 50 over cricket where I don't love money enough.
That's big.
Yeah. So England needed 30 off 8 balls the other night. And Sam Billings got hit on the head by a bouncer. Been on camera for 8.5, 9 hours. They need 30 off 8 balls. We have a 10-minute break while Sam Billings gets a concussion check. Then the doctor goes off and Sam Billings decides that his grill's not sitting right on his helmet. So we have another 5 minutes while they fuck around with his helmet. They come out, Jofra Archer, because they've run a single, toe-ends one off the bottom of his bat. So they need 29 off 5. Archer's broke his bat. So we'll have another few minutes while Archer gets another. You need 30 off 5 balls, lads. I don't care if your bat is actually a 5mm howitzer cannon. It's not going to score 30 runs. Just play with a broken bat, dude. Jesus.
Or just borrow the other guys.
Yeah. Owen Morgan, every second ball, has a conversation with his bowler, and they do one of two things. They either move mid on up or drop fine leg.
And if fine Surely leg they back, do they not do that as a bit of like a soap on a rope? So if mid on goes back, fine leg comes up. So they're attached, like a pair of mittens.
But
if you
what?
Pull one end, the other end has to come in.
But you know what? Let's just knock it on the head, Morgs, eh? You know what I mean? It's like when they come out for the first day of a test match and the first ball, they rather than just going to predetermined fielding positions, they'll have a chat about it. Why not just set your fielding positions before you go out?
It's balls true.
Piss, mate. Absolutely balls my piss. And I can't, I wouldn't understand, I just don't understand why people find it entertaining.
I think when England are winning, and obviously the build-up to the World Cup and stuff, that was entertaining. I personally could not give less of a shit about 50-over cricket now. We won the World Cup. If we never win it again in my lifetime, not asked.
Yeah.
We done it. Thanks very much. That'll do.
Yeah.
Focus on something different.
Yeah.
Cool. Ben, any other business from you?
Also give my best wishes to Daryl. I wanted to get that one in there as well because he's a great guy and I hope he gets better really soon. And also thank you to everyone who sponsored Sarah for her sugar-free fundraising for motor neurone disease. Didn't notice your names on there, you tight buggers. But anyway.
I'd have had to have known what you were talking about.
rebadged it, you fool.
But thank you to everyone who did donate off the back of the mention last week. That was very generous. Thank you very much.
Cool. My only business, I have recently been watching the All or Nothing about Tottenham Hotspur. I know these sporting documentaries get a lot of hype. But if you haven't watched the All or Nothing series, which I'm sure most people have, like the behind the scenes, the invasive camera stuff, the it is the most, if you're a sports fan, it is the most incredible watching. All of these documentaries, I think, are. But I watched the one for Manchester City, and Pep Guardiola is this tactical genius, and everything is planned, and everything has its place right down to the minuscule detail. It may surprise you, but with Tottenham, it's completely the opposite. Jose Mourinho literally doesn't seem to have a tactical bone in his body. His management style is entirely based upon motivation and buy-in from the players and stuff. And you don't see any tactical stuff. And maybe saying that he doesn't have any tactical bones is a bit harsh, but the different styles of management. And that could be attributed to all walks of life and all sports and stuff like that. But having...
And editing.
Yeah, obviously, and editing. They want it to look a certain way. I get it. But to see how he, Jose, operates in and around the squad is certainly interesting. And it's interesting to know that in the teams that he's managed before, how quickly it can all turn sour. Because if he loses the dressing room... then it doesn't seem like he has much more to back it up with, like tactically.
See, I always thought when he was Chelsea manager, they always went on about the binders for each opposition, the stuff that he would have on each player's preferences and where to push them to force them into bad situations. So I think that's purely down to editing. I don't think that's... And I think there's a narrative around Guardiola that he's like this tactical genius, you know. Wasn't so great last year, was he?
No. But yeah, really enjoyable. And even as a Tottenham fan, it's a good watch. The other thing I was going to say is I'm fucking sick to death of water breaks. Can we get rid of them now, please? Like, no need. We're middle of September. We're not in the baking sunshine. Players do not need to stop every 20 minutes and have a drink. They don't need to do it. Just get on with the game. If it's a shit game, we don't want to be sitting there any longer. A bit like your cricket thing, Doug, like having a discussion every ball. You don't need to do it. Don't need a water break. Just fucking get on with the game. It's really, really annoying at the moment. So, we did have a couple of questions that I meant to bring up, but I won't now. I'll save them for another time, another discussion. Suffice to say that in our fantasy rugby draft group, Eddie Stevens, who is one of the funniest people I've talked to, He's just put in there, I want everyone to know that I was a fan of Joe Rogan before anybody else was. I met him after a show 10 years ago, and he called my wife on the phone and called her a bitch. also, I played rugby against Grant Mitchell about 20 years ago. He was good, but I sidestepped him, and he went flying like a cunt. So, congratulations, Eddie. That is absolutely fantastic. For those of you that haven't listened, I was in Eddie's shed. Or I was in my shed while Eddie was in his house, weirdly, last week, and that was an enjoyable experience as well. It was always good. We ended up talking
about transatlantic shed off,
but we talked about some random stuff. We talked about some rugby, and we also talked some utter shit, which you might expect if me and Eddie were left alone together. So right, that's it. There's obviously European rugby this weekend, amongst other things, and we might be back next week to talk about it if we're all still here
alive. I killed myself after the third ODI.
Doug isn't found swinging by his camera cable off the stand at Old Trafford, although we shouldn't be making jokes about that, really. Oh, well. Go well, people. We'll catch up with you very soon.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.